CEO of the Hatch Institute, Ian Furr, is joining us. He's on the line. We wanted to talk to him about the hard truths that 2020 has taught us. And what a segue into a conversation with Ian. Ian, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Sure. Yep. So it hasn't certainly. We just announced the passing of Dawn Dawn Lindbergh from COVID-19. 2020 has been a particularly difficult year. Many lessons, many things that have occurred. And you wrote an op-ed that I thought was very, very interesting, entitled "Three Hard Truths That 2020 Taught Us." Tell us about it.
Yes, thank you very much. And first, let me say that it's very sad about Dawn Lindbergh passing. I was a big fan of Des and Dawn in the good old days. The three hard truths that 2020 has taught us. Well, firstly, 2020 has been such a ridiculous year and crazy year, and I'm sure it'll be talked about for many years and even centuries to come. But some of the things that were highlighted, particularly during the pandemic, was the inequalities in South Africa. And what I call the paradigm paralysis of people, which means that they couldn't really change their minds. They're stuck in their beliefs. People have paradigms. They have unconscious biases. And the inability to change is what really is holding us back in South Africa. So if people are not able to challenge their own paradigms, there's no way they're going to see a need for change.
Is that a unique...
Change doesn't ever take place in... a comfortable position. It only ever takes place where there's discomfort.
Is this something that's unique to South Africa or something that you've observed around the world?
No, I'm sure it's all over the world, and I think in America at the moment particularly, it's highly a big problem really in the States and in South Africa. And I think it's about racial polarization, which really lies at the heart of most of the problems in South Africa at the moment. Racial polarization, which is a legacy of 300 years of systemic racism, has created all kinds of problems, in particular in business, where it impacts negatively on cultures. If people do not feel that they are treated fairly or with dignity or treated with respect, and if they don't feel trusted or valued for their contributions, it's highly unlikely that you can build a culture that is going to go out there and serve your customers to the best of its ability. So we look at racial polarization as being one of the biggest challenges in business. If we can try and create a bit more of a sense of belonging and common purpose in organizations, I think we'd have a much better chance of being successful in businesses in South Africa.
So do you think it is about racial polarization, or do you think it's about a lack of clarity with regard to vision? In terms of looking, because so often my sense is that a lot of this is so not conscious, that of course there is racism in the workplace, and I think anybody that suggests otherwise is not walking around with their eyes open, but they might be shocked actually to hear it. So do you think it? Well, maybe I'm wrong. Do you think it's conscious, or do you think this is a subconscious?
I think it's both, Howard. Some of it is conscious, but a lot of it is unconscious. Mm. What we call unconscious bias, which is about prejudice and discrimination that people aren't even fully aware of because it's so ingrained into their minds, into their mindset, into the way of believing and their value systems that they don't even realize it. So 300 years of racial manipulation and social injustice is so deeply ingrained in people's minds that they don't even realize half the time that they are being racist or that they are being discriminatory or prejudiced in one way or another. So it's really important that we start to challenge those things and start to challenge those unconscious biases and understand the difference between prejudice, discrimination, and racism. Right. Just quickly on that, prejudice is really about making a prejudgment about somebody who comes from a different group. Discrimination is when you act out on that prejudice. And racism is when you're prejudiced and discriminatory, but you come from a base of power. So during the apartheid years, all the institutionalized racism were the things that created these mindsets of white superiority and black inferiority. And that's what we have to tackle now. If we ever want to become a nation that has some sense of equality and opportunity for all, we're going to have to shift the mindsets of the people from this racially polarized environment to a more equal environment. Mm. Otherwise, I'm not quite sure what's going to happen to this country.
Right. And the last thing that you talk about, so you speak about paradigm paralysis, which holds us back, racial polarization, and the last thing you speak about is hopelessness.
That's correct. And hopelessness has permeated this country. There's a lot of overwhelming negativity that's being seen throughout the country. You know, it's very negative. The media, business people are losing hope about their sustainability. Employees are losing hope for their job security, and people that are unemployed have just lost hope altogether. So we have to try and see if we can turn that around. And the only way to do that is to shift the paradigm and to shift the mindsets individually of people, to get them to explore their own unconscious biases, understand the need for change, and not be paradigm paralyzed. In other words, open to change is called paradigm flexible. That's what we're looking for really in this country, so that we can shift hopefulness from hopelessness and see if we can start to be a bit more positive about our future, because the only thing that's more powerful than fear is hope. And so we have to try and build hope and see if we can do that, even if it's one person at a time.
So I guess hope is one of the ways in which we build a better 2021. What are the ways in which we can deal with or create a better future for ourselves?
I think the only way to change really is to change the mindsets of people. The government is not going to change anything for us, I don't believe, certainly not in the foreseeable future. So unless we start to change people individually, get them to understand, particularly, you know, the white people looking at things like white privilege and stuff like that, and being the beneficiaries of years and years of institutionalized racism, we have to get people to actually start looking at themselves, go on a little bit of a journey of self-discovery, be willing to accept and tolerate more, and be willing also to be looking at different ways that they can make a contribution. Because we all have a moral obligation to uplift this country, a moral obligation to try and break down the inequalities and close the gap between the rich and the poor. So this is what we have to be doing, and unless we can do that, then the status quo will just continue, and that'll be a problem.
Right. And so we've got to look inward. We've got to see what part we are playing in this polarization, really.
Correct. Yes. And in business, in particular, we have, for example, race relations courses that we're now running, where people get to be exposed to people of a different race to them, and to learn what their history was. We have a thing called a mini truth commission, where people tell the story of their lives, what it was like growing up in South Africa. Lots of ways to get people to step out of their comfort zones and to begin to understand the extent of the problem and the extent of the racialized sort of situation and mind manipulation that has come from years and years and years of this type of racism. At the end of the day, it's really about us looking at ourselves and challenging our own paradigms, our unconscious biases, and then trying to overcome them as best we can.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. One of the initiatives that I was involved with and developed at a company was something called the Human Library, where what we did was we asked people, it's a company of about 150 people, and what we do is we set up a system of library books, and we asked people to be library books, in other words, to tell their stories. So every 2 months we release about 15 new library books, and people have got to book them, take them out as they would a library book, but obviously they've got 45 minutes with that person on Zoom or whatever. How cool is that? It's working unbelievably. And what you do is you sit with a person and you hear their story, because once you've heard somebody's story from a personal perspective like that, And many of the stories are around things like this, dealing with adversity, challenges in life, maybe issues around gender, race, etc., and how people overcome that. And it's their choice which story they want to tell around themselves. But you never look at that person as just a woman or just a Jewish guy or just a black person, a white person, whatever it would be. But you actually, because you've read them as a book, and we've actually found it to be tremendously, tremendously successful.
Okay, right. That's a fantastic concept. I am familiar with that. In fact, I've spoken to the people overseas about possibly getting involved, you know, in South Africa with the Human Library.
Yeah,
and we're in discussions
at the moment.
And it really is a very powerful, powerful tool to get people to share their stories with you, particularly when they come from a completely different background, with different baggage and different views and different lifestyles.
And that's what you're saying. I mean, one of the things that you're saying in your article is get everybody involved.
Correct. Everybody needs to be involved, not just the leadership of organizations, but all the public, everyone, all the employees, just having those uncomfortable conversations sometimes, because it's obviously a lot of tension around these discussions, you know, particularly about black economic empowerment and white privilege and racial superiority and all of the things that are so challenging and controversial. But we do need to have those uncomfortable conversations if we're ever going to learn. You know, you cannot learn when you are speaking. You can only learn when you are listening. So the more we listen to the views of other people, the more we will realize the need for change. And that's ultimately what the objective is.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we do need to leave it here. You're involved with the Hatch Institute, and this is pretty much the life mission and the work that you have embarked on. And well done to you, Ian Fur, who is well known, of course, as an entrepreneur, but trying to make a difference in South Africa. It is 8:23. I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519 or 061-895-1019. Bendita says, "Hi, Howard. It's an interesting conversation. My opinion, overriding everything Ian has said, is greed and selfishness. In my view, they are really the issues at play." And of course, a fair comment, and I think that does away with so much of the goodwill and so much of the positivity.
At Boston City Campus, all 45 support centers are open in line with lockdown rules. Studying is open too. You can do everything online.